Hi, everybody. It's David here from the Meaningful Connection podcast. We come from the simple belief that meaningful connection with ourselves and others is the key to unlocking the fulfillment and joy that life has to offer. So we interview world-class experts who help facilitate meaningful connection in the lives of humans like you, dear listeners. And today we have an awesome guest. This is Deborah Heisner. She's a PhD. She's the founder and CEO of The Mentor Project. She's also a PhD in applied developmental psychologist, a TEDx speaker, among other awesome things, which I'm sure we'll get into. And I just want to say thanks so much for coming on the show today, Deborah.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure and what a privilege. Thanks yes. for highlighting meaningful connections.
Yeah, I you know, it comes from kind of our story and just reflecting on why do people do what they do. And I think, you know, I'm super excited because really why do people help each other? Why do people mentor each other? And I think we're going to dive into that really deeply today. So give us a little bit of the backstory. Like, you know, as a kid, what did you dream about doing and how did that manifest itself into what you do now?
Oh, it's kind of funny. You know, I was fishing. It's funny that you asked that. Nobody's asked me that in a while, what I wanted to do as a kid. I'll tell you, when I was eight, I was fishing through some old paperwork in my house from when a move happened, and I wanted to be a nun apparently when I was eight, and I couldn't be farther from that now. But so you never know what you're gonna be when you grow up. You know, what you set out to when you're eight might change a lot. But I did, by the time I was 20, decide that I wanted to work in the field of aging, or about the age of 22. Because I had a grandmother that I was really close with, who was really impactful on my life. And I think that by being close to her and learning to talk with her and her friends, she went through a period of depression. There was a psychologist in her assisted living facility who said, "Don't worry, we're going to fix your grandma." And I thought, how can you possibly fix grandma? What does that even mean? And she said, "She's depressed. She's going to get over it. It'll be okay." And she did. And I said, "I want to do that." Mm-hmm. And that's what made me want to go into the field of aging. And I really haven't ever looked back since then. And I'll tell you that with, you know, in hindsight now, looking back, it was that meaningful connection with her and with all of her friends that really made me have that desire to go further and continue to work with older adults. It was really impactful.
Okay, so you went into aging as a young adult, and then as that, I'm assuming that's when you became a developmental psychologist. Is like, do you go to school for that?
What I did was I worked in a research department in a psychiatric hospital in New York. Where they, it's Cornell Weill, it's in Westchester, and they had an aging division. I worked there and I said, you know what, I think I'd like to do this. So I applied for graduate school in a PhD program and chose Fordham University's applied developmental program. It gave me the ability to look at things clinically, but also research, have a big research focus. And there really wasn't any area that was focused on aging at the time. It was in the 90s. And so it was a really difficult choice to find a place that where I could really pursue what I wanted to. Nothing really existed. And Fordham gave me the opportunity to really do what I wanted to do. And they supported that. So I was able to go and I worked in a nursing home to do my dissertation, studied depression and how to identify it. But it wasn't until a few years later that someone said, "Hey, what do you do as an aging specialist?" And I was so proudly telling him, "Oh, I study frailty and depression and all of these things." And he said, "Well, what good is that?" And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean, what good is that?" And he said, "Well, what do we have to look forward to?" And I was like, "Well, you know," and I was really hesitating because I didn't have an answer and I was a little embarrassed. And so I had to take a hard look and see why was I doing what I was doing? What was there to look forward to? What could I really tell the next person who asked me? And that's when I started to really look at generativity and took a step back and looked at what we're...
Sorry to interrupt you, Deborah. What is generativity? Just for the lay people that may not know. Sure.
So generativity is a developmental stage. So as a developmental psychologist, I look at all the normal things we're supposed to do, right? So when you're a baby, you're supposed to learn how to walk and talk and do all these things. And we expect that, right? We don't stop at puberty. We stop when we die, going through these developmental stages. In midlife, we're expected to want to give back to others without expecting anything in return. That's what generativity is.
Okay. Yeah, so, that makes sense.
What happens is we go through a stage where we, our identity phase, where we figure out who we are, what we want to do. Like I decided as part of my identity, I didn't want to be a nun. I wanted to go out and do other things in life. And so I think that these are the kinds of things that if you look at your identity, then it's intimacy. So you find out who you are, then you get into a relationship with whomever that is. You maybe have a family. That's intimacy. It's shedding some of the superficial relationships that you have and saying, I'd rather have fewer but closer friends. This is when the meaningful connections come into place. And
So I'm a dad of three, and there's definitely that trimming down of your social circle when you get married, but then a big culling is when you have those kids, because you start to realize, oh, like time is short. These people need me 100% of the time. And so any superfluous friends that were kind of like, you know, hang out and not really do too much friends. I wouldn't say like I consciously lost them, but they, what we have relevant with each other or in common, I should say, is a lot less, because of just the way that your social circle just gets more intimate. I think that's a great way of putting it, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when I say intimacy, it's not what a person's initial reaction might be. It's that you're having meaningful connections. That's really what that means. And you gave a spot on example of that.
Yeah. Like in your 20s, you're kind of playing for stadiums. And then in your 30s and 40s, you're playing for clubs, small, intimate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're getting a lot of enjoyment out of that. And so once you have your meaningful connection set, it's when you can sort of relax. So usually it's by the time you're in your 50s that you hit the stage where your kids are a little bit, you know, maybe they're in high school, maybe they're a little older, but you're not, it's different when your kids are little. You don't have the time for giving back to anybody. You are giving everything you can to little kids. So you're usually not in a position to be able to do that. You don't have bandwidth. By the time you're in your 50s, usually, and it depends on when you have your kids and how all of that works out. So it's very variable, just like learning how to walk and talk. It, you know, it could be, you know, 7 months or 16 months. It's all normal. So around midlife is when you have a desire to give back without expecting anything in return. That's with, you know, you've built on your meaningful connections. And it's where you say, hey, I've checked off all these boxes. I've done everything, right? We've all done that. We've done what we're supposed to do. And now we say, well, what meaning did I have in the world? Like, what did I leave behind? Is anybody going to think that what I did was important? And do I think what I did was important? And say I have some expertise. Does that even matter? Mm-hmm. So that's where people hit the stage of generativity and care for others without expecting anything in return. And parents can all understand this, because you give to your kids and they aren't like, thank you every day, right?
No, no, they're not.
Right, but you love them anyway, and you can't wait to give more to them. That's just how it is. And that happens with people who aren't our children as well. And so that is the hugest part of meaningful connections, because when you have a meaningful connection and you're able to give back, you feel like you made an impact on the world. It makes your world bigger. It makes your life have purpose and meaning, and you feel like you have a legacy. It almost brings about a immortality, because you are passing on a bit of yourself into someone else who's then going to carry it on. And that's what's the most powerful part of generativity. And, you know, when I talk about mentorship and giving back and all those different components of it, that's the key to it.
That makes a lot of sense. So is that kind of the embryo of the mentor project and how that came into being? So I'd love to hear the story of how the mentor project got started.
Sure. So as I, you know, was writing a book about mentoring and really getting a deep dive into the whole aspect of people who give back and what do they get out of it? You know, I have always heard about what the mentee gets out of it and the search for a mentor. You know, we all hear about people saying, go out and find yourself a mentor, grab a mentor. But the mentor is like some elusive figure that, you know, no one knows anything about. And I always say it's like some schmuck that's out there who's just waiting for somebody to take from them. So when I was going through that, I met with Bob Cousins, and he's the guy who patented how we use credit cards on the internet. Like, he's the real deal. He was in 2020 named Inventor of the Year. Like, he's a big guy, and he mentored all the time. I was fascinated by him saying, I love to, you know, help kids patent. I love to help kids do things. It's really amazing. And he was such a generative guy that he brought me to a hackers convention. And I was able to meet other people who were also just people who had changed the world. But they were all saying, look, we're retirement age. We've done our thing. And now we feel like our resources ourselves are being wasted. And we don't have a way to give back. We will look like weirdos if we approach kids and say, hey, do you want to learn quantum mechanics? And yes, parents would like yank their children away from.
Get away from that man in the van, kids.
Exactly. Yeah. No mentors for you, children. Like,
never take mentoring from a stranger. That's what we always tell our young kids.
Yes, exactly. So the mentor project started because a couple of people said, I want to give back to kids in schools. And one of those was one of the fathers of the firewall, Bill Cheswick, who said, I want to get into schools. So we brought Bill and Bob, and then a couple of other people came on board and said, hey, me too. And then last year in January, we had 10 mentors and actively going into schools, doing amazing stuff. And then 1 year later, we had more than 80, and we have a long wait list of people who want to come on and give back. They have the same problem that people who are looking for mentors, the mentors can't find mentees. Wow. And in my TEDx talk, I said, we're wasting our most precious natural resource. It's not oil and gas. We're wasting all these big brains. They're just wasting away, not being used. And so for free, we said, okay, the mentor project is all 100% volunteers, everybody. And we are giving away the most precious natural resources to anybody who wants it. And so they meet one-on-one. Already in January of this year, one of the students, one of the mentees, had his first provisional patent. He was 16. And we have other groups who are working with big law firms like Squire Patent Boggs, who is advising on how they can get ideas patented. And we have a team working to get kids into entrepreneurial positions, and we're in 6 countries now.
That's so amazing.
This we found was the biggest surprise to us, is that more people are desiring meaningful connections and being a part of the world and making a difference than we ever thought. Like, it's bigger than what I found in research, because people that I don't know are contacting me all the time saying, can I join in? Can I help out? Mm-hmm. What can I do? And our mentors say, can you give me more things to do? They aren't saying, just give me a couple of hours. They want a lot. And I mean, it's honestly, it makes my heart swell at least 3 times over. to see all of that happening.
That's amazing. So there's a wait list for mentors. If let's say I'm a young, say a startup CEO or even a high school kid, like what's the age range of mentees that are kind of, I guess that's the you need more mentees. So, you know, if I'm a young person, I want to get involved, you know, what's the criteria and how do I get involved?
So we work with kids kindergarten through university. So if you're 36 and you're in university, come on in.
Okay.
Care about the age.
Yeah.
So much. And if you're 4 and you're in kindergarten, fine, come on. If you're 7, who cares?
Yeah.
We're trying to be as inclusive as possible. And so we're taking it all the way through, you know, even graduate school, but just to get people who are not launched yet, launched. And it can be an individual who says, I'd love a mentor. We had a 14-year-old girl say, hey, I'm interested in climate change. Do you have somebody who can talk with me about it? She didn't have a specific question. She was interested in learning about it. So I put that out to 3 of our mentors and they all 3 wanted it. But then we saw which one, you know, it was kind of which whoever was going to go first, you know, whoever said me first got to take it. And that person saw a mentor weekly via Zoom for about 6 months. And another college student was interested in engineering. He meets with Bob weekly and has been for about a year, I think now. So it can be like that, or it can be that schools have said, hey, we'd like to have, you know, the astronaut or an astrophysicist come in and give a talk on something. We do Ask Me Anythings for Argentina schools and kids in the community. So it can be a person, an organization, or a school. We're open to everything.
That makes so much sense. So to do so, I'm assuming they're going to go to the mentorproject.org or mentorproject.org.
I'd like to take a short sponsor break to tell you about the company I founded, Bunky Life. What we're famous for are small log cabin kits called Bunkies that can be easily built in a weekend without needing a permit or a second mortgage. I've also authored the book, Bunky Life, Extra Space. Ultimately, we're in the business of helping families create extra space for more meaningful connection. And you can find out more at bunkylife.com. To see if your family might be ready for the Bunky Life, take the free 5-minute quiz at bunkylife.com/quiz. That's bunkylife.com/quiz. And now back to the show.
So if I may, can you scale this back? So let's say I'm not a life-changing inventor of plastic or something. I'm just a regular grandparent or something. Do you have tips for me, grandparent me? How do I establish that and initiate that with the people in my life or the grandkids in my life?
I'll tell you, people are already mentoring. They don't even know it. And every grandparent is mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how religion got moved from, you know, passed on for centuries. How was that? Because people passed on the stories, the meals. You know, every time you have a holiday meal and it's the same meal over and over and you pass that down, that is a form of mentorship. You're passing down your values and your culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's mentorship. So you do not have to say, a lot of people have come to me and said, hey, do I have to have a formal degree in order to mentor? And I say, no, you really don't. You know, for example, I have my kids live with my mother-in-law and we do all the holidays. So we just had Passover here, right? So my mother-in-law's recipes have been passed down and the stories of living in Europe and all of this gets passed down. That religion and the belief system has been passed down for centuries. It's now in my kids.
Mm-hmm.
She passed that down. She mentored them. But she does that through everyday activities.
Yeah.
You know, and every holiday meal and everything that is ever done. So if you are a grandparent, just grandparent, you're mentoring. And you don't have to set out a schedule of what you need to do or get out a list of here's what I want to do. Every grandparent already knows what they want to pass on to their kids, their grandkids. You know what's important. Follow that. That's exactly, you're doing exactly what you need to do. And you will see that come through in the kids in how they go about initiating their own independence later on. And it's beautiful to see. It really is.
So what resources would you point someone in the direction if they want to be deliberate about, okay, like, you know, as a parent, as a grandparent, I want to be deliberate about what I'm doing. You know, are there resources that you suggest that we look into or read up on or listen to?
Yeah, you know, okay. So if you're a grandparent, one thing to do is to acknowledge that you're doing something, right? Because that's going to make you do it more. As soon as you're aware of something, you're going to do it more. So acknowledge, you know what? Although you don't have to have a list or have specific resources, if one part of your culture is important to you, well, then go get engaged in that in your community, right? In the part that is part of the culture that you're, if that's a religious aspect, go to your church, go to your synagogue, go to your mosque, or wherever, you know, and get involved and bring the grandchildren and show them. Be aware of what you're doing. If it's recipes, be aware of it. Maybe you want to videotape yourself with them. A lot of it is also going through photo albums and walking through the history of your life, because you're passing that on to them. Those stories then get passed on generation after generation. And those are important. People often think, well, I don't want to bore the grandkids. You're not.
Yeah.
That's exciting for them. Looking at old pictures, old videos, that is fascinating. And they soak it up like a sponge. And that's mentoring. Any skills that you have. So if you are a fisher, if you do, you know, fishing, that is a skill to pass on. Any crafts like woodworking, any kind of skill, anything like that, that is mentoring. You may see it as a hobby, but it may be something that sparks something in the next generation and that gets carried on. It's just something that may change a way a person sees something or does something.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that if I could articulate what the average Western person feels, it's that soupiness and that disconnection from the past. It's part about being a modern person, right? That you start to feel like you're kind of just lose touch with your grandparents, and because things have really changed since my grandpa grew up on a farm and had, I think, no running water for like the first little bit of his life, right? That's not that long ago, but it's a dramatic change from the life that I've lived. And yeah, I can say as a grandkid of my grandparents, I love to hear those old stories of how they grew up and what it was like, and, you know, the experiences they had. And yeah, if you're listening to this and you're going, oh, I don't want to bore the grandkids, I mean, people are excited to hear about where they come from, because it's something that can kind of get just muddied up and washed away by modernity in a way that can make you feel a lot ungrounded. So to hear those stories is mentoring for sure. And it's a way to be connected with your past as a young adult.
Yes. And I think that, you know, there was someone, Christopher Bellido, who wrote a book on, I think it was called like Aging Wisdom or something like that. But he talks about even how the individuals in the Bible were talked about and how they carried on and how they mentored. He talks about that. And one thing we know is that history gets passed on, and it really is the grandparents that are doing it all. 100% of it. So any little thing that you think you are boring a kid with, you're not. You're passing on the history, and you then are a permanent part of that history. So if you choose and acknowledge that you are going to be passing something on, you are going to be a part of that history of that child. So you will always be able to pass on a bit of your grandfather's farm. And you know, what to you was, oh, no running water, because you have running water. You can't even imagine that. When you talk to your kids and you talk about, like I can talk to my kids about not having, I had a wall phone, and they're like, that's crazy. You know, like I talk about like, no, I'm in my 50s. So we didn't have a remote control. We had to get up and change the channel. And there were only like 5 channels. That to them is like crazy. So when we think of these things and we just allow ourselves to sort of move through our lives, when we pass this stuff on, it's absolutely stunning to the next generation to hear how we lived through these unbelievable olden day times of no phone, no GPS in the car, no microwave, all of these sorts of.
We had to wait for the song to come on the radio so we could listen to it, kids. It was crazy.
Exactly. Oh, and the car with the crank handle. My kids think that they're like, what in the world are you talking about? These are the things that we all take for granted. And if grandparents talk about those things, it's exciting and interesting. It's like living in adventure land when kids hear that. Like,
yeah,
wild.
Yeah, that's so cool to think about. Well, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to explain where we come from. If we wanted to learn more about you, metroproject.org, I would assume, is a place that you'd recommend we go to.
Yes. We also have Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. So if you go to the Mentor Project in any of those locations, you'll find us.
Cool. And is your TEDx talk also on YouTube as well?
It is.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, we'll have links to all that in the show notes for sure. And is there anything you want to leave us with before we kind of sign off and say goodbye?
I just want to say, I'm sure that everyone that is listening is mentoring. You just don't know it. So keep doing it and acknowledge it.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Debbie, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. It was such a pleasure.
Well, me too. Bye.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you've learned a lot, but beyond just mere intellectual entertainment, I hope it's changed the way you see your relationships and inspired you to take action and make a connection with someone in your life today. Do it. I'd love to hear about it, and you can always email me directly at david@funkylife.com with the subject Meaningful Connection. Love to hear your stories.